Good Saturday afternoon to you, and welcome to Woods and Water, South Carolina. It's going to be you're going to learn a lot today. Trust me, because I've listened to all that's going to be talked about today, and I learned a lot, so you're going to learn a lot today. And the person that's going to be doing all this with us is, he's a wealth of information here in South Carolina. We are lucky to have Charles Ruth as the head of our deer and turkey, projects. And we're going to talk a little deer and a little turkeys, right, Charles?
That's right, Roger. Good to be back on your program.
Yes, sir. Thank you for taking time to be here. Like I said, we ran into each other at Millery the other week at, the state Quality Deer Management Association Advisory Board meeting, and you talked to me a little bit then, and then I listened to your whole presentation in front of the House Ag Committee on the turkey study that we've done. It's just a lot of information that a lot of people need to hear about. So I'm going to ask you just a few questions. You're going to run with it, and we're going to have a good time today. And I guess where we need to get started is, for those who don't know who Charles Ruth is, take just a minute and tell us who you are, Charles.
Well, Roger, I'm a wildlife biologist for the South Carolina Department of Natural Resources. I've been with the agency over 20 years, and my current position is big game program coordinator. I actually hired on as the deer program coordinator back in the mid-90s, early 90s, assumed responsibility for the turkey program when our longtime turkey program leader retired in 04.
Okay.
And most recently, here 3 or 4 years ago, took over the bear program. Understand that we don't have bears in the Midlands, and we've got folks in the mountains and on the coast who do most of the bear work. But from an administrative standpoint, I deal with bears as well. The message is we now have a big game program.
Okay. All right. And you're the man in charge.
Try to be. Sometimes I wonder.
Well, you know, I don't know if you expected 2019 to be rocking and rolling this early along, but there's a lot going on in Columbia, both with the Department of Natural Resources and on the legislative side. And as we were talking at Millery, you know, something that came up with the deer tag program, not by y'all's doing, but by a House representative, kind of a good thing. Tell us a little bit about that one.
Yeah, it really is. And, of course, I think most of your deer hunter listeners will recall that there was a big piece of legislation that went into effect in 2017. It was something that our agency and a lot of hunters across the state had really been interested in and working on for a decade or more. And that was the, quote, you know, the deer management bill or you know, the all deer tagging bill, whatever you want to call it. We just, Roger, finished, obviously, the second season of the all deer tagging. And I'm not complaining a bit. You know, that was a good lick. That was a big step forward for deer management in South Carolina. But honestly, where it ended up from the tagging standpoint, it was pretty darn complicated.
Right.
And you know, your hunters will recall that we've got these 8 date-specific tags, which basically replaced exactly the doe days that we had leading up to this change.
Right.
And that was kind of intentional. Once we got down to the brass tacks, there was a lot of interest among some of the legislators in providing the exact type of opportunity for our hunters with the tagging program to harvest antlerless deer as they did before. That's how you got with what I call the doe day doe tags.
Right.
But I'll tell you, we learned right away that it was way too complicated, and it really wasn't providing much opportunity to our hunters for our hunters to take antlerless deer, doe deer.
Right.
And you know, we started hearing from hunters that, you know, can't we just have a tag that we can use anytime we want to? Well, move forward through the second cycle, and lo and behold, there was some interest on the House of Representatives side coming out of the House Ag Committee in doing just that. So, like you said, we were thinking about this,
sure,
but we didn't feel like it was the right time to try to make a change. But once the opportunity presented itself, Roger, we took advantage of it. It was, you know, so far it has been a very good process. Working with the House Ag Committee,
Okay.
Working with QDMA, working with South Carolina Farm Bureau, and we finally, after a bunch of hand wringing and teeth gnashing, we all got on the same page. Got the bill out of committee, got it through the House. It has gone to the Senate side, and we're hoping that it will rock along and we can get this done. And if it will clear the Senate by the end of March, we can actually put this in effect for this coming deer season. Now, all of that said, I'm sure everybody wants to know what exactly is the plan.
Yeah, well, what is the plan?
The plan would be to completely eliminate the 8 date-specific tags, the doe tags.
Okay.
In lieu of that, as part of the base set of tags that resident hunters receive, you know, they receive their 3 buck tags.
Right.
You would replace those 8 dated tags with 2 tags that could be used on any day beginning September 15th through the end of the season. And I know, and you were part of this, Roger, when we talked about it with that group that mm-hmm. day. But the reflex for some people is, well, that's a ripoff because you're going from 8 tags to 2.
Yeah.
But you kind of got to take a deep breath and understand that you had 8 days of opportunity to take a doe deer with those dated tags. What this proposal will do will give you 109 days to choose any of those days you want to kill, you know, 2 doe deer.
Sure.
And if you look at the statistics, Roger, we know that 92% of our hunters take 2 does or fewer. So basically, it's going to cover 90% of the hunters in the state. Now, the optional tags that everybody's so accustomed to that have been around for 25 years, the ones that you can buy for $5,
right,
that doesn't change.
Okay.
So, you know, for people who want additional opportunity, they can still get their optional tags. But we think this is a great thing. It's going to, you know, from a, I'm going to be clear on this. We're taking a revenue hit to some degree because, you know, giving away any day tags is going to hurt the purchase of the optional tags,
right,
that have always been around. But we're good with that. We think this is a good move. It's going to be simpler in the tagging system.
Right.
It will provide our resident hunters with much more opportunity and flexibility to harvest doe deer. So we're really excited about it. And, you know, I've just got my fingers crossed that it won't get twisted up on the Senate side. And I'm optimistic.
Sure.
You
okay.
know, like I said, we can show up. DNR supports it. QDMA supports it. South Carolina Farm Bureau supports it. So I don't know what else it'll take to move it ahead.
You know, when we were down there at Millery, when we were talking and all, it just takes as much as a car that's out of commission or somebody wanting to go to a football game or having to do a honey-do thing around the list, and that marks off like a whole Saturday, and you've lost one of those tags just, boom, right there.
Yeah, you get a rainy day. You know, the last 3 years in a row, we've had some tremendous natural
yep.
weather phenomenon that have encumbered many weekends during the deer season. And that's exactly the point. The feedback we were getting from hunters is that these dated tags are basically useless.
Yeah.
And, you know, I'm a deer hunter, and I run around with deer hunters. I mean, I work with most of our staff here are deer
yeah.
hunters. My friends are deer hunters.
Yeah.
And one person that I know has used one of those dated tags in 2 years. You know, everybody's getting their optional tags. That's
yep.
that's what they're using. So, yeah, the Saturdays, they just don't work.
Yeah.
It just didn't work.
It
did not work as envisioned.
Yeah. And it'll take that almost 2 pages of tags and reduce it down to 3/4 of a page of tags now.
That's right. Yeah, the base set of tags for a resident hunter will now be the 3 buck tags, just like it has been.
Okay.
And you will have the 2 tags that are valid from September, any day from September 15th through January 1. They'll be valid on public land. They'll be valid on private land. Bam, you're good to go. You don't have to worry about if it's a Saturday and check the date and all that. You just, you know, if you're, you know, it's a good thing.
Yeah.
I'm excited about it.
That is exciting. All right, Charles. Well, look, let's good news for the hunters. Let's take a break, come back, because there's a turkey study you guys did that I think is just, man, it's a great one. Hang on, more Woods and Water South Carolina on the other side. Taking it to the street. Let's do discussion for the night. Taking it to the street. Oh, night. Welcome back to Woods and Water, South Carolina. We were talking to Charles Ruth from the Department of Natural Resources in the first segment. Good news for deer hunters. If this goes through, and Charles said it was already through the House, headed to the Senate, you're going to go from 8 dated doe tags to 2 anytime tags. Opportunity increases from 8 days to 100 and something. That's good news for us deer hunters. And, Charles, that just kind of came out of nowhere, didn't it?
It did. And like I said, Roger, you know, we, at some point in time, we were going to try to bring this subject up. And when it came up in the House Ag Committee, you know, we seized on it, and it so far so good. I've got my fingers crossed because I'm a deer hunter, and it's a really good thing.
Speaking of, and this is not something we talked about, Telecheck. You know, I ask you a question. Do you think Telecheck is coming to South Carolina as far as the tagging system goes?
I do. I really do. I think, hey, don't get me wrong, Roger. I'm from South Carolina. I love South Carolina. But in many things, we're always going to be last.
Right.
Most states have it now. Georgia, most recently.
Okay.
Alabama has it. So we're kind of standing out there alone. I do think it'll come. When, I don't know. It may be a couple of years. But, you know, that'll help us with the collection of harvest data. And it will also help on the enforcement side, as you can imagine.
Yeah. Yeah. Wow. Change. Always fun stuff to talk about. All right. Back in, what was it, 2015, I believe the South Carolina legislature tasked you guys with doing a turkey study. That study's done. You gave a great presentation to the committee, and I really want to spend as much time as you want to right here. So tell us about this turkey study we just had finished up.
Okay, well, you know, just get everybody on the same page. Most of your turkey hunters will understand that beginning in 2016, the legislature established a new statewide season in South Carolina, private land March 20 to May 5, and that was a change particularly for the majority of the state, which had formerly had the April 1
right.
through May 1 format.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, with that season change, Roger, there was some concern not only from hunters and other folks, that the legislature put a sunset clause on that new season structure, okay? And that means it will go away at some point, and
okay.
That point is coming quickly. In addition to that, as part of the law, they instructed DNR to study the turkey situation and report back to them in November of 2018. So the report has been provided, and that's what you're referencing in
right.
the presentation.
Right.
So what this is all about, Roger, is boil the water off of it. When is the appropriate time to set the turkey season in South Carolina? It's all about timing.
Okay.
Because unlike any other game bird, you're hunting turkeys in the spring, which is coincident with breeding and nesting. So there's a real fine line in there in affording hunters an opportunity to hunt gobbling birds and also allowing hens to do their business, which will perpetuate turkeys for the future.
Okay.
That's what this is all about. And the more we look at it, this timing issue is a pretty concise. Things change very rapidly leading up to breeding. Breeding takes place, then you have nesting, so on and so forth. And there's a lot more thought across the Southeast that the timing may be affecting turkey populations. And I'll start by saying that if you're a turkey hunter in most parts of the state, you understand that we're not carrying the number of turkeys that we were 15 or so years ago. There's
right.
no question.
Yeah.
You know, our turkey numbers are down 35% or 40% over a 10-plus year period. It's not just South Carolina, Roger.
I was just fixing to say it's not it's not our state problem. It's across the Southeast.
It's exactly right. And the turkey biologists in the Southeast have coined the phrase, quote, the Southeast turkey decline. Now, this is not a panic button type of issue. We still got lots of turkeys in South Carolina. We just don't have as many as we once did.
Right.
So as part of that, a lot of the turkey people are beginning to think that season structures back when turkeys were recolonizing the state and they had that very high reproductive and survival rate.
Right.
What we were doing to turkeys from a hunting standpoint, it really didn't seem to matter.
Okay.
But things change. You know, most turkeys in most states, they've completely recolonized. They've kind of hit the Mother Nature-imposed ceiling, which in many cases is going to trend them down to begin with. You start factoring in things like habitat, predation, nest predation primarily, which has always been an issue for turkeys.
Okay.
And now we're thinking that this timing of hunting may be an issue. So, again, based on that legislation, we were charged with taking a look at it. And
okay.
I can tell you that we did spare no expense in terms of money. We had a bunch of federal money that we were going to, you know, lose if we didn't use. We don't have any, you know, the state doesn't have, quote, turkey money.
Right, right.
So we had money. We got the best researcher, one of the best researchers in the company, Dr. Brett Collier, LSU. This study was done at the Webb Wildlife Center, which I know a lot of your listeners are familiar with. It's a very premier wildlife management area down in Hampton and Jasper County.
Right.
High turkey numbers. The area is hunted. So what we did to look at this timing issue, Roger, we looked at two specific things.
Okay.
The timing of gobbling by your gobblers, by your males, and the timing of nesting by your hens. Now, to study the gobbling, we use these. It's called an automatic recording unit. All right, and it's basically, it looks like a trail camera.
Okay.
But it's a recording device, and what we would do, we'd take a climbing deer stand, run that thing up a tree, put the microphone out, turn it on. You know, it's got batteries, it's got an SD card, and it just simply incidentally records all kind of sounds.
Okay.
The bird people, you know, the Tweety bird people have been using these things for years. So we said, well, let's rather than having people out listening for turkeys, let's get these devices. And we won't have to pay people to do it. And you come out a lot cheaper in the long run. You could not do with people what we did with these devices. So we had three areas, Roger. We had the Webb Center complex, which is about 25,000 acres. It is open to hunting every day but Sunday.
Okay.
We had Cracker Neck Wildlife Management Area, which is part of Savannah Riverside. Cracker Neck is open 2 days a week for hunting. Then we had Savannah Riverside, which was our control area. There is no hunting
on
Savannah River for turkeys. There's no hunting.
Okay.
So what we were interested in on Savannah Riverside was it was going to tell us the true natural distribution of gobbling in turkeys, uninterrupted by human activity or hunting.
Okay.
So what we found was that, and we had, you know, about 50 of these gizmos out.
Okay.
For 4 years, we recorded about 100,000 gobbles, okay?
Okay.
And we had them programmed to record just like a spring turkey hunt, starting 30 minutes before sunup to 2.5 hours after sunrise. And you're just like you go out and you listen for a bird, he flies down, you fool with him, so on and so forth. And what we found, Roger, and I don't know that this would be lost on most people, was that on the hunted areas compared to the unhunted area, the commencement of hunting immediately and negatively impacts gobbling due to the death of gobblers. Obviously, dead turkeys can't gobble.
Right, right.
And disturbance, what I call, you know, getting them
boogered up.
Getting them boogered up.
Yeah.
So if you look at this data from the hunted areas versus the unhunted area, what's remarkable, Roger, is that we have never seen the true peak in gobbling because of our hunting activities. In other words, if you start hunting on March 20th, gobbling hasn't got as good as it's going to get.
Okay.
It doesn't do that until early April. The problem is, as soon as you start hunting, it truncates the gobbling.
Sure.
So the message is, if you look at it, and this is in the southern part of the state, let me stop right now there, and stress the point.
Important point right here.
Yeah, that this research was done about as far south in the state as we could get. Understand that all of this gobbling and reproduction in turkeys is controlled by photo period, which is length of day.
Right.
And what you find is that the further south you are, the earlier it is, and the further north you go, the later it is. Those are just facts.
Right.
They aren't arguable. So what we found by looking at this gobbling data is you could easily start the season 2+ weeks later, and it wouldn't affect the overall amount of gobbling that hunters would be available to hunters. And the bonus would be there would be more gobbling, a more intense amount of gobbling when the season opened than it is right now.
Okay.
So it's kind of a win-win situation. And the thing about it is the amount of gobbling that goes way out through the end of the month of May naturally is amazing. It's an amazing amount of gobbling that goes on with these birds. So that was kind of the gobbling part.
Okay.
The second part, Roger, was us trying to figure out exactly the timing of the nesting by hens.
Okay.
Right?
Got about a minute here, so don't go too far down the road.
All right. Well, the way you do this is, number one, you got to catch turkeys, specifically hens. And I know a lot of your listeners know, we use a rocket net.
Sure.
You bait them up in the wintertime. You shoot the net on them. You get your birds, and obviously you put bands on them. But now we've got, this GPS technology is sophisticated enough now to where you can really downsize it. We're actually outfitting these hens with little GPS backpacks. And turning them loose, you can program these things to record a waypoint every minute if you want to.
Okay.
It burns the batteries up.
Okay.
But we were recording about every 30 minutes, and we'll pick up there when we get back from the break.
That's some incredible stuff here, folks. You need to, if you know a turkey hunter, you got 3 minutes to get him on the radio so you can hear more about this turkey study with Charles from DNR. Hang on, more Woods and Water South Carolina on the other side. Welcome back to Woods and Water, South Carolina. We are we're learning about turkeys today, really. I mean, we heard a little bit about the new deer tag legislation and the changes coming that we hope are coming there to the good of all hunters with opportunity. And now we're going on this turkey study that we had done here in South Carolina. Charles is gracious enough to take some of his time to be with us. So, Charles, we got through a little bit of the gobbling. You talked about the GPS packs on the hens. Take it from there and let's roll with it.
Okay, well, yeah. We caught hens for this. This was a 4-year study, so we were catching hens in the wintertime, putting the GPS units on them, tracking them. I say tracking. Most of the work's done with the GPS.
Sure.
So we did this for 4 years, Roger. We had, 125 or 30 hens out there. The two things we were interested in was nest success and then ultimately the timing issue of when are these hens actually nesting. I'll tell you one thing that I've learned. It is very difficult to be a turkey. More importantly, it is very hard to be a hen turkey in the springtime. We entered the breeding season cumulatively over these 4 years with over 100 birds, and we were able to get, I believe it was 88 hens attempted a nest.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
The difference being either hens that died between the winter trapping period and the spring nesting period, or, occasionally one of these transmitters will crap out on
you. Okay.
But anyway, what we found was that you get a certain number, a certain number of birds attempt a nest.
Right. And that's your 100% right there. That's where you're using as 100%.
Well, yeah, you've got let's say you've got 100 birds out there. We found that only 67% of them attempted a nest. So that's question number one. Why were some of these hens not even attempting to nest? And one reason is some of these are juvenile hens.
Okay, all right.
Depending on how mature they are, they may not nest. But we know that we had a number of adult hens that never attempted a nest. Okay, so once you get these birds to attempt a nest, you only have about half of them that successfully hatch a brood, because you got possums and coons and snakes, right, and stuff that, you know, breaking up the nest. And that's old news.
Okay.
But then you take another 50 plus or minus 50% hit once you get the poults on the ground, all right? And yet another 50% hit getting these poults to 15 days of age, which at that point they can fly a little bit and they don't have to stay on the ground. A lot of people don't understand that these hens are on the ground with the eggs, and then with this brood of small turkey poults, and they can't get off the ground until these poults are about 2 weeks old. So they're extremely vulnerable, not only to weather, but to all types of predators, small, you know, raccoons, possums, snakes, hawks, you name it. So, you know, overall, we only had about 15% of our hens in this study successfully raise a brood to 15 days. And that just goes right back to this loss of productivity that we've seen in South Carolina as well as most states. So that's not a good thing.
Okay.
Now, as far as the timing, and this is the very important part, Roger, we have now documented over multiple years in this study that in the southern part of the state, the average hen turkey does not start laying until April the 9th. I've got to say this because some people don't know it, but what a hen does when she starts to lay, she will lay one egg a day.
Okay.
The rest, while she's laying, she turns back into a turkey the rest of the day. She you know, she hangs out with other turkeys. She sleeps in a tree. She roosts in a tree. Then she, the next day, she does the same thing. Only after she completes her clutch, which is normally 12 or 14 eggs, in our study it was 13 eggs on the average.
Okay.
Only after she completes that clutch does she begin what is called continuous incubation. That's when she starts incubating, and she basically stays on those eggs 24/7. She'll take a recess and go use the bathroom, get a drink of water, or peck at a bug or something, but she doesn't normally stray more than a couple of hundred yards from that nest, and she may not be gone more than 30 minutes or an hour. So basically, she is locked in on this nest for 28 days. That's why she's so... Yeah, go ahead.
And that begins, on average, April 22nd.
Yeah, because, and that's easy math.
Yeah.
If you've got the average hen starting to lay on the 9th, and she averages 13 eggs, then on the average, she's not going to start incubating until April 22nd. And again, that is in the southern part of the state. So, you know, right away, you start seeing, okay, now let's think about this. We now know the timing of hens. We now know that we're starting to kill gobblers on March 20th, which is about 3 weeks before she starts laying.
Right.
So you got to kind of get the wheels turning a little bit and say, well, what may be going on here? Well, what we now know, Roger, is that 60% of the annual harvest of gobblers in South Carolina occurs before April 9th. That is huge.
And how are you getting that number? Because a lot of people don't know.
Yep.
You know, yep. A lot of how do they get that number? Tell us how you get that number.
That comes from our hunter survey. We've always done a huge post-season hunter survey, and it actually breaks the season into weeks. So, you know, if you get a survey, you say, yes, I killed a turkey. I killed it in Greenville County, or I killed one in Greenville County, and I killed it between March 20th and March 30th or whatever. You know, however we've got it broken out. So bottom line is people are telling us how many birds they kill by week.
Okay.
And if you look at the data, it says that 60% of all the turkeys that are killed before April 9th. More importantly, Roger, is that half of that 60% is multiple kills. Now, I'm not talking about somebody that doubles the same day.
Okay.
But I'm talking about the same hunter killing more than one bird before April 9th. So... You know, to kind of pull this all together, the recommendations across the board in the southeast, and this comes from all of the turkey people, is that if you want to do right by turkeys, you do not want to start your turkey season before the average laying date. And you determine that in your own state.
Okay.
And so we have done that, and it's April 9th. So as part of the recommendations we gave, you know, again, the legislature is part of all this turkey business. They had asked us to do this research and make a report with recommendations. That's exactly why we recommended an April 10th start date, because that's exactly what the data says we should do if we want to do at least reasonably right by the turkey resource.
Okay.
So, you know, that's where we are. Currently, the season issue is effervescing in the legislature. In fact, you know, just in the last 24 or 36 hours,
right,
a bill, and like you said, we were very fortunate that both on the House and the Senate side, they asked us to present, not only to give them the report, but to present a PowerPoint-type presentation summarizing this research. So we've already, you know, we did that back at the first of the year.
Right.
So they've been trying to figure out exactly what to make of our recommendations and what they're going to do as far as setting the turkey season for the future. And so that's where we're. There has been a bill filed, like I said, in the last 24 to 36 hours. We're just now getting a look at it. It is not like our recommendations. It's still an earlier opening season. So we're looking at the details of that legislation right now, trying to figure out, you know, what kind of response we will have when we're asked about it.
Okay.
And, you know, and I'll tell you this, Roger, big point here. I'm a turkey hunter. I work with turkey hunters. I run with turkey hunters. What we at DNR would like to see is more turkeys on the landscape, so we will have more turkeys to hunt.
Sure.
And I think a lot of folks, when folks hear us talking about not recommending to start the season until April 10th, they're saying, well, DNR is crazy.
Right.
You know, they're trying to make it harder. They're trying to hold us back. The birds are already gobbled out. That is not true. Birds aren't gobbled out. If they are, it's because you've been messing with them for 3 weeks. You've killed a bunch, and you've stepped on a bunch and boogered them up. You know, if you look at the data, that is just when the peak of gobbling is starting to come naturally. So there's room in there for us to get this thing right, which we think will dramatically help with reproduction on the hen side. It's not going to hurt people's hunting. And, again, we want more turkeys, so there'll be more turkeys to hunt.
Sure.
You know, important point, Roger.
Okay.
We're harvesting, you know, our record harvest was back in around the turn of the century, 2002, I believe. We killed 25,000 birds. We had a lot fewer hunters at that point.
Sure, yeah.
Last year, we killed 17,000 birds, and we had a lot more hunters. So we're killing fewer birds with more hunters than we were 15 years ago. And that just, you know, for me personally and professionally, that's not where we need to be.
Yeah. Yeah, you're exactly right there. Why? Talk about that for just a minute. More, you know, hunters as opposed to 2000 to 2019 or 2020. Talk about some of the improvements in what turkey hunters use.
You know, that's a good point, Roger. I mean, like I said, things change. And a couple of things that we now know, and I'll go ahead and tell you, I started turkey hunting in the early 80s, and there was really no such thing as afternoon hunting. Maybe you go out and try to roost a bird to know where you get started in the morning. But we know that nowadays, 25% of our birds are harvested in the afternoon. And I'm not finding fault. I'm not picking
Sure.
on people for hunting in the afternoon.
Right.
But I'm saying that is different. You know, you got a lot of folks that are still hunting turkeys out of blinds on green patches or chufa plots. You know, putting out a spread of decoys and just sitting there waiting on birds. They know eventually they're going to come into that patch and they shoot, you know, and then they shoot a gobbler.
Okay.
Nothing wrong with that, but the fact is that some proportion of that is additive harvest that used to not be there. So that's a difference. If you look over the history of, say, 40, 50 years of turkey hunting, you got 3-inch magnums.
Right.
We got sophisticated chokes, and they become more sophisticated every time we turn around. We've now got this TSS shot that's just come on the market that they're advertising that'll kill a turkey at 60 or 70 yards. Look at the development of decoys, the sophistication of decoys. So the bottom line is that, and this has been fairly recent, you know, a decade, maybe 15 years, is that we have become technologically advanced, which leads to us becoming much more effective and efficient at killing turkeys. All right? So, you know, that's a great point you raised. Things have changed, not only in the woods.
Right.
But how we're doing business as turkey hunters. And, you know, again, we want to see more birds on landscape, so we'll have more birds to fool with in the springtime. But we, at the same time, we got to be common sense about this thing and look at the trajectory of our turkey population. You know, we're on a downward trend like a lot of states.
Right.
And let me say right now, Roger, these same discussions are going on in multiple states in the Southeast. I promise you.
What's the name of the organization? There's a Southeastern Study Group out there.
Well,
or a loose association.
It's CEWFA, CEAWFA. That's just a synonym for the Southeast Association of Fish and Wildlife Agencies.
Okay.
And that is the entity that represents all of the combined fish and wildlife agencies in the Southeast. Okay.
All right.
And they actually put a report together about this whole timing issue on turkey nesting and hunting and so forth. And, you know, we fed off of that. We found our own data here in South Carolina and made the recommendations based on what the experts say when you set that season to provide for good hunting and to perpetuate your species.
Yeah.
And that's what we went with. And, you know, we'll see where we end up as far as what the legislature does for the future. And it may be a situation, Roger, where we have to yet again revisit it in 4 or 5 years, you know, depending on what our turkeys are doing here in South Carolina.
Sure. Because whatever we do now is going to affect so many years down the road. If we make the wrong choice, then we're going to see it within a few years.
Yeah. And you know, back to this, you know, the big point about early season dates is, and I failed to mention this, is simply the early and excessive removal of these gobblers and not giving them a chance to get with the hens and get these hens fertilized. That's the bottom line.
Right.
You have got to get these hens bred or else you're going to suffer during the nesting and brood rearing season. I mean, that's just basic common sense.
You mentioned I'm going to interrupt you here for just a second. I don't like to do that too much. But you mentioned back when we were talking about the 100 hens that you had tagged, you had some that were immature. But you had mature hens that weren't even attempting a nest. Were they just not even getting bred during the season?
Well, you know, that would be speculation.
Okay.
But I think you've got to put that on the table that, you know, either through the loss of these dominant birds or disturbance, there is some reason that these otherwise healthy, mature hens did not attempt to nest.
Okay.
And also something, Roger, you know, with removing a lot of these birds early, you know, we know that nest success is not that great.
Right.
But yet hens have the propensity to re-nest. You know, they build their energy back up. They must they got to breed again. But a month later, they may try to strike another nest. We did not see a lot of re-nesting attempts, which make us think maybe there's not enough of these toms, you know, the right tom out there. You know, it's important, and hunters understand this dominance issue in turkeys.
Okay.
Turkeys aren't like deer. I mean, they have true dominance. And there's a lot of thinking now that these hens may actually be selecting certain dominant gobblers because it will increase their chances of successfully nesting and increase the chances of those poults. They just produce better offspring is basically what it is. But if we're knocking out these good breeders, so to speak, before the breeding season, where does that leave us?
Yeah.
And there's a lot more folks kind of coming on and with that line of thought at this point in time. And, it, you know, a lot of this makes you wonder.
Yeah, it does. And all of this, we got to keep this in perspective. We are, all the work you guys do, the recommendations you make, it's in the interest of the natural resource. It's not in the interest of a turkey hunter or a deer hunter. It's what the study and data on the natural resource is telling you we need to do.
Well, and, you know, that's a good point, Roger. You know, our two primary charges are to manage these resources for the future, for now and for the future, but right behind it, and just a touch behind it is, let's provide as much opportunity for folks to utilize these resources as we can.
Yep.
And I think a lot of people don't understand that. I mean, you know, the crowd that I work with here in our wildlife section, we are hook and bullet people.
Yeah.
You know, the reason I went into this career, and it was probably a mistake, was because I like to hunt. You know, like a lot of things you do, you end up, you know, 25 years later saying, you know, I'm working too much, I don't have time to hunt. But everybody deals with that.
Sure,
you know?
Sure. Yeah.
So, we're trying to move things ahead, brother.
I hear you. Is there anywhere, is that turkey research available to the general public?
Yes, the full written report is on our website. If they will navigate around and get to the turkey page,
okay,
it will be front and center. There will be a link that they can take to look at the report. It's an exhaustive report. Again, 4 years done in our state. We contracted Brett Collier at LSU. He's a preeminent turkey researcher. He was the big brain behind the GPS data. And you know, looking at the movement to these animals, and basically he collected the data, he gave it to us, and we wrote the report.
Very good. Well, anything else you want to add in closing?
You know, I think that about covers it.
Okay.
You know, again, we'll see what happens here. You know, something needs to happen because the current season is going to, you know, self-destruct, so to speak,
after the
2019 season. So, you know, it'll be up to the legislature to set something up for 2020 and then, you know, the years to follow.
Very good, my friend. Well, Charles, thank you very much for your time, for your knowledge, for your expertise, and look forward to talking to you soon.
All right. Thank you, Roger.
Yes, sir. Thanks, Charles. Welcome back to Woods and Water South Carolina. It's going to be a short ending to the show. Just a lot of information. I don't think any of us expected this much legislative action this early in the year, but good news for the deer hunters, you heard. If you want to pass it on to somebody else, they're actually it's through the House and into the Senate now, going from the 8 dated doe tags that were dated for Saturdays only to a general 2 doe tags to use anytime you're out in the woods, which is, again, a huge increase in opportunity. And then Charles and the study on turkeys and just a lot of information there. But the science and the study is, you know, like you said, over the years, this is what they found. So it's not like they went out and did a one-year study and said, this is what we're, you know, it's across the Southeast is having this problem. And here's an article I found from the Wichita Eagle out in Kansas. As Kansas turkeys on a 15-year decline, state ignores advice to alter hunting season. Wild turkey populations are on a 15-year decline in Kansas. There are so few birds that more than half of the state's hunters failed to bag a single turkey last spring. But state officials did not make a change proposed by a team of biologists and law enforcement from across Kansas, flouting their own guidelines for the second time in 3 years. The proposed change would have suspended the fall turkey season. We used to have one here in South Carolina, which is, you know, you're digging into those grouped up birds, and that's the reason we got rid of them here in the Southeast. Kansas still has one. The fall season is one of many factors driving down the turkey population, such as loss of quality habitat and weather, said Ken Frickle, small game coordinator for Wildlife Parks and Tourism, but those things are largely out of the Wildlife Department's hands. How low do we have to let things get before we do something? If the problem continues, it could be a real threat to the Kansas economy and a blow to a state that has built a reputation as one of the premier turkey hunting destinations in the country. Turkey hunters spend more than $51 million a year in the local economy, including buying gas, food, and lodging. The spring season alone brings in $1.7 million a year in permits and tag sales to the state's wildlife department, a state agency that doesn't receive any support from the general fund. I don't want to become Kansas. I think that's why we need to act now. And as this legislation goes along, I've never asked anybody on the show to be political or to get involved in politics, but there may be a time when I call you to say, hey, look, we need to get a hold of our legislatures and say, look at the data, look at the studies, and think about the natural resource and not a few of your voters who are really vocal and want you to let them shoot a turkey early in the season. It's not worth it. Waiting 2 or 3 weeks is not going to kill you. Look, you can go crappie fishing for 2 weeks, okay? There's other things you can do outdoors. And I want to end with a quote by Theodore Roosevelt. Of all the questions which can come before this nation, short of the actual preservation of its existence in a great war, there is none which compares in importance with the great central task of leaving this land even a better land for our descendants than it is for us. And that comes to the wild, the natural resources. So anyway, hope you enjoyed it. I'm going to podcast this one on the station website and post it again on Facebook. Hope you'll listen to it. Talk to your friends. Talk to your turkey hunters. As always, make time to get out there. Take the back roads when you can. Don't forget the camera. Back next week with more Woods and Water, South Carolina.
To hit me from so high, 'cause I'm gone.